So Fair a Cave. Written by Thrawn Life and read by Litra. A Star Wars Thrawn fanfic with the pairing Thrawn Eli Vanto. Rated teen. With additional tags for Earth AU, Trapped, Claustrophobia, Hurt Comfort, Supernatural Elements, Ghosts, Haunting, Horror, Possession, and Cave-ins. Summary. There were rumors that the cave was haunted. There were rumors that the cave was haunted. The stories ranged from the cliché to the tasteless. A cave explorer, they said, had gotten stuck in the tunnels back in the 19th century and died of thirst. Some people said you could still hear his voice when you went too deep, beckoning you closer, luring you to the same narrow tunnel where he died. Anything to trap another soul down there with him. Anything to ease the loneliness of death. Other stories said the spirits were far older. You could trace the voices back to the days when Eli's ancestors hunted mammoths through the ice of Monument Valley. The days before this land was invaded and remade by murderers and thieves. There, then, some unfortunate hunter's spear broke the wall of a glacier and woke a spirit that wasn't meant to be woken. Not true, obviously. None of it was true, and Eli had never been scared by the ghost stories anyway. He adjusted his headlamp and crawled forward an inch or two, his elbows scraping up against the wet stone floor. Cave water left his outer layer slick and shiny, but he'd taken care with his waterproofing before he set off, and the chill hadn't reached him yet. He'd been spelunking since he was a child, and he'd heard 1,000 different ghost stories, and none of them were true. Caves were filled to the brim with things humans instinctively disliked. Insects, bats, darkness, the close snugness of the walls against your skin. Those things bred fear. Fear bred ghost stories. Ghost stories bred more fear, and he felt bad for anyone who feared the cave systems. Who couldn't see the mathematical beauty in these passages underground, in the map lines he created when he emerged from the hole? Some of these caves were so dark you couldn't see a thing, their walls caked with mud. Others were so breathtakingly beautiful that Eli could close his eyes and still remember the moonlight shining off the water and reflecting on crystals all around him. Or the phosphorescent glow of algae sticking to his fingers when he brushed by. How could you be afraid, really afraid, when you'd seen all of that?
Vanto,
said a staticky voice over his radio, interrupting his thoughts.
You're out of sight.
What? Eli turned his head. It gave him a neck cramp to look over his shoulder in such a narrow tunnel, but just past his feet he could see the lamps of his survey team, an unnatural yellow glow in the darkness. I can see you, he said. He squirmed until one arm was free and clapped his hand over his headlamp in Morse code. Blinking at you now.
Don't see you. Turn back.
You don't see me? Eli didn't bother with the radio this time. He just raised his voice. Surely you can hear me. We're 6 feet apart, for God's sake. No answer. With an exasperated sigh, Eli turned back to his tools, struggling to use them with the cave bearing down on him from above and squeezing him on both sides. Usually he found this tight squeezing almost comfortable. Now it was just irritating. His elbows bumped against the stone walls as he worked. Compass for direction, clinometer for inclination, laser rangefinder for distance. He swore under his breath and noted down each measurement carefully. Later, when they were all out of here, it would be up to him to turn these numbers into a two-dimensional map.
Eli,
said the voice over his radio again. He set his rangefinder down with a sigh. He had to press the radio's on button with his chin, too lazy to go through the shoulder-straining stretch normally required. "Eli here." A long pause. Dead air. Then the radio flared to life again.
"Eli?"
said the same voice again, this time as a question. Ugh, these new guys. Rich college kids looking for a thrill. No competence. They'd be the death of him. Eli lifted his chin and pressed down again, harder, in case he hadn't pressed the button right the first time. "Eli here," he said, louder, trying to keep the exasperation out of his voice.
"Eli?"
He looked over his shoulder. Glared, really. Already squinting in anticipation of the light. But there was no light. His headlamp washed over the tunnel where it stretched into darkness behind him, and it splashed over the pitted stone wall at the end of the passageway, with no sign of the chamber where his survey team waited. No sign of other people's lights. Just darkness. Slowly, Eli extricated his arms and held the radio to his lips. "Grim," he said in a whisper, his stomach tightening. "I don't see you."
"Eli, come in,"
said Grim. "I'm here," Eli said at once, an edge to his voice. "Grim, we don't play pranks underground. What are you..."
"Eli, do you copy?"
"Fuck." Eli slammed the radio against the palm of his hand 3 times, so hard that his knuckles bashed against the stone floor and the plastic casing of the radio creaked. He held it to his lips again, panting a little. "Grim, come in," he ground out.
"Eli, do you copy?"
Where were they? Eli looked over his shoulder again. The tunnel stretched back as far as the eye could see. Beyond that stone wall, it curved and curved again, twisting to the surface. But he'd just looked a few minutes ago, hadn't he? And his team was right there, 6 feet away, lights blinking in the dark. He hadn't moved an inch since then. He'd only lain here, absorbed in his measurements, not moving at all. Okay. Eli let his radio rest on the cave floor. He squeezed his eyes closed until his breathing evened out, and then he opened them again. Before him, the tunnel narrowed sharply. Behind him, well, he must have moved without thinking about it. Only he'd never done that before. Only it didn't matter whether he'd done it before or not, he reminded himself sharply. Clearly, he'd done it this time, and he needed to deal with that now. He needed to stay calm, first of all, and wiggle his way back to where he started, to his survey team, and then out of the cave, and they could laugh at his expense when he was done. He clipped his radio back to his shoulder strap. He tucked his tools into his utility belt. He let his breath out to make himself small. He shifted back. Nothing happened. "What?" Eli said. His belt caught on the stone ledge overhead. The rough walls squeezed in on his chest and back. A tight pinch. Best if he got off his elbows onto his stomach and... But when Eli dropped, the ceiling dropped too. His chin clipped the floor. His teeth clicked together. A dull ache started in his chest. The pressure of the cave suddenly so tight it hurt. His compass poked against his ribs. He could shift his hips. He could move his legs, just a little. He couldn't do much else. Cave rock, impossibly heavy, pressed down on his spine, on his thighs, and grazed the back of his skull just hard enough to hurt. "You're stuck," said a voice in the dark. Eli took a shallow breath, whistling and thin. "Who?" he started, and then swallowed, started over again. This wasn't a voice he recognized. He ran it past the members of the survey team, even the newest ones, but it didn't fit. This was a male tenor, soft and cultured, with an accent Eli didn't recognize. Not Spence, and definitely not Karen. Someone new. "Who are you?" Eli asked, a little steadier now. The hum seemed to come from the walls themselves. It vibrated over Eli's elbows where they pressed against the stone. It rattled through his teeth, into his skull, over his cheek. Beneath him, where the cold, wet ground touched his skin, there was a quaking, like the start of a cave-in. "Who am I?" the voice said. Eli's headlamp flickered out, but that didn't mean there was no light in the dark, narrow tunnel before Eli, so narrow that no human being could possibly squeeze through. A pair of eyes blinked open. They were human eyes, or near human, intelligent and sharp, the size and spacing of an adult. They illuminated a pale face, shark cheekbones, narrow jaw, close enough to touch, but not a hint of breath. "Your eyes," said Eli, his voice shaking. They were a dark, glowing red. "Can't you move?" the voice asked politely. Were they red? Maybe it was a stress hallucination. Eli turned his head and rubbed his eyes against his trapped forearm. "You crawled in here," the voice said reasonably. "Surely you can crawl back out." "It's not..." Deep breath. The compass point poked into his rib again. "It's not that easy," Eli said, his voice going high with a new, unfamiliar emotion. Fear. "Crawling backwards is..." "Shift your hips side to side," the voice coached him. "I tried!" "It will take some practice." "I tried," said Eli again. "And the cave just got smaller. I know it sounds crazy." God, he was talking with a man with red glowing eyes. Talk about crazy. Eli cut off a broken laugh and hit his face as best he could against his arm. "I know it sounds crazy," he tried again, swallowing against a tight throat. "But it's true. My team, they just disappeared. They couldn't hear me. I haven't moved at all, but suddenly they were gone, and now the cave..." He didn't want to say something so irrational, but it slipped out anyway. "It won't let me move." Silence. Deep in the cave system, there was an echoing drip of water. Impossible to tell which direction or how far away. "Your senses are playing tricks on you," said the voice softly. "A common side effect of panic."
"I'm not panicking," Eli mumbled, his face buried in his sleeve. His heart thumped in his chest, so close to the skin that it nearly kissed the cave floor on every beat. "Just why did the tunnel change? I..."
"Perhaps you are losing time," said the voice. "It would explain your confusion about how you got here. You do not remember crawling into this narrow hole. Is that correct?"
"I didn't crawl here," Eli said. "I wouldn't crawl here. My team..."
"But you are here," the voice said evenly. "And the cave did not come to you."
There was no sound but the harsh rasp of Eli's breath. He shifted his hips, like the voice had told him to, but it only emphasized how hard and cold the stone beneath his body was. And when he stopped moving, he felt as though the walls had grown a little closer, a little more snug. The ceiling clamped down on his shoulder blades. A rocky outcrop hugged the back of his knees. "Who are you?" he said miserably.
"My name is Thrawn."
"A ghost?" Eli asked, voice weak. Those red eyes became hooded. Long, dark eyelashes split the scarlet light into shadows.
"A traveler," said Thrawn slowly. "But I have been down here a very long time."
Eli's stomach sank. He breathed in until his ribs ached. He breathed out until he felt smaller,
until the walls weren't quite so tight and the weight of the cave system didn't feel like it would crush his skull. I must have wandered into a gas chamber, he said to himself. That's all this is, a hallucination. No. Carbon monoxide poisoning, it must be. No, said Thrawn again. Did you lure me here, then? Asked Eli, remembering the stories. Red eyes searched his face.
For what purpose? Thrawn asked.
Eli's stomach tightened. He took as deep a breath as he could before the walls began to pinch, and then he let it out again, unsatisfied. To keep me here? To soothe your loneliness? In the dim light, he thought he saw a flicker of a smile.
Who said I'm lonely? Thrawn asked.
The stories.
And why would I want a corpse for company? Far better if you live. Now come. Move your legs in and out. Use your boots for purchase.
A shuddering breath, eyes closed. His father showing him how to clip a rope to his belt. The awe and terror of that first cave when he was 8 years old. Eli let it all go and shifted his legs. He could do this. He'd done this a million times, hadn't he? A creak of the knee as he bent it. A scratch against the stone as he dug his boot in at the heel. A shiver in his thigh muscle as he pulled them together, tried to drag himself backwards. An inch. Just an inch. But he didn't budge.
Let your breath out,
Thrawn counseled. It's already out.
Not if you're speaking to me.
Pulse hammering in his temples, lungs tight, Eli took a series of short breaths and let them out in one clipped sigh. Empty. Small. He shifted his legs again. A butterfly kick, like he was swimming underwater. Only he'd always been more afraid of water than of caves. He forced himself to remember the crystals, the phosphorescent algae, the comforting lines of a map on his computer screen, and let it soothe the sting of panic, just a little.
Drink the cave water when you're thirsty, Thrawn advised. It will stave off dehydration.
Dehydration? Eli huffed out a defeated laugh and stopped kicking. It'll kill me faster, he said. This water is full of chalk. Another hum, thoughtful and low. The pebble on the cave floor near Eli's face trembled and pitched over on its side.
Your tools,
Thrawn said softly, and Eli went still. His jaw clamped tight as something cool stroked his chest, like knuckles brushing against his skin, right above the compass.
What do they do? What is their purpose?
You think I can dig myself out of here with a compass?
No,
said Thrawn. There was no hint of offense in his voice. Maybe he didn't even realize Eli had insulted him.
I'm only curious. I've never seen them before.
You've never seen them before? Eli asked. No other cartographers died in here recently? It was a joke, but Thrawn didn't laugh. And in the silence, with the cave pressing down on him, Eli's own bitter chuckle turned into a high-pitched, shallow breath. Hate prickled in his eyes. They're for taking measurements, he said, his chin trembling. He hid his face again and held his breath until the tears passed. The survey team gathers the data. We never leave each other's sight.
Until today, Thrawn said.
Yes, until today. Eli closed his eyes. The cool cave floor pressed against his cheek, wet and gritty with dirt. The thick, damp scent of earth and stone filled his lungs. No two caves smelled alike, not really, but some of them smelled similar.
This one? It smelled just like the one he fell into when he was a kid. The dark hole deep in the fields, hidden in the grass. He swore he saw a rabbit going down it. Later, as an adult, he didn't trust that memory. Couldn't be sure it was real. Maybe he just imagined it. Maybe he'd just watched Alice in Wonderland and wanted an adventure. Who knows? But he'd poked his head inside, and the ground crumbled, and a fistful of yellow grass came out in his hand, and he hit the cave floor so hard he nearly broke his leg. He could remember cradling his leg to his chest and staring up at the patch of sunlight he'd fallen through, his breath rasping in his chest, shallow and fast, and thinking to himself, "How the hell am I going to get out of here?" And then the fear had clicked over into something else, the thrill of a puzzle, of a challenge. The same feeling he got in first grade when his teachers took him aside and had him try the 8th grade algebra book. His eyes had darted from one end of the cave to the next, cataloging everything he saw. Every tunnel, every rock formation, every possible foothold. In a way, it was his map. He'd loved caves ever since. Loved the darkness, loved the eerie scuttling of insects, the leathery fluttering of bat wings overhead, loved the exertion, the ache of bruises and sting of scrapes, the tight squeeze of narrow tunnels, the uncertainty, the sense of accomplishment, of superiority when you're done. He lowered his chin. He pressed the radio's on button again. There was no sound of static, no dead air, nothing. "Thrawn?" Eli said. "How long have I been here? My battery's dead." Silence. Then, in the same soft cadence as before, "Your senses are playing tricks on you," Thrawn said. A narrow cave was almost like a hug. That's what Eli's mother told him, the first time they went spelunking together. She'd clipped their belts together with a rope and touched his ankle every now and then to let him know she was still there. She thought he would be more frightened than he was, more cautious. In the end, she had to scramble after him, constantly calling him back and warning him not to go any deeper without her. Half exasperated and half amused. "There was nothing to be scared of," she said at the start. "Know your limits. Respect the cave, and the cave will respect you." So, Eli stopped struggling. He leaned into the embrace. He slept. In his dreams, he was a boy again, holes torn in the knees of his jeans, the scent of the sun and dirt on his skin. He sat up after his fall, hugged his knees to his chest, stared up at the hole he'd fallen through, to the sun. In his cut-off t-shirt and the cool cave air, he was suddenly very cold. But he didn't mind. Goosebumps pebbled his arms. The dank, wet smell of earth filled his lungs. The tunnels beckoned to him. He wanted to explore. He could make this cave his clubhouse if he wanted to. He could take his friends here, be their teacher, show them how to get in and out, guide them through the twists and passageways with all the authority of an expert. They'd smuggle soda in, and comic books, and cigarettes, and do anything they wanted down here. Tell ghost stories, talk about sex, bitch about their teachers or their fathers, or the girl one grade above them who laughed when they walked by and called them cute like it was an insult. But in the meantime, all alone, Eli poked his head into the tunnels for the very first time and took a breath of ancient cave air. And his heart soared, and his limbs were light, and his head was swimming. Maybe he'd find cave paintings, or bones, or bats. But he didn't find anything, and when he told his friends about the hole in the ground, none of them wanted to come see. He should have felt disappointed. He didn't. The cave was just for him. In his sleep,
He was an explorer, and he'd tied a rope to his belt so he wouldn't lose his way. But when he reached his narrow tunnel, when he was ready to turn back, the rope was gone. He looked back, his buckskin clothes butter soft against his chin, the smell of tanned animal hide mixing with cave dirt in his nasal passage, and confusing his senses. Where did that rope go? He hadn't felt it snap. Surely he would have noticed the sudden slack, and he'd only just checked for it, skimmed his palm automatically down the length, felt the rough fibers against his skin. So even if it did break, it should have been close by, loose on the cave floor. He scratched his beard and felt behind him, fingers questing for the rope. It wasn't there. It had disappeared, like some malevolent creature had reached out through the narrow holes in the walls and spooled the rope inside, out of sight. He wiped his brow. He thought of all the other places he'd been, the things he'd done, the discovery of Mammoth Cave, the ascension in the Alps. Next year, God willing, to Everest, to try his hand at something no man had ever properly accomplished before. This cave, this insignificant little cave, was nothing. This rope was nothing. So it was gone? No matter. He would find his way out. He would. He was a hunter, and a cave was as good a spot as any to hide from the rain. He was a child, and his father was angry with him, and nobody would ever find him here. He was an exile, footsore and weary, and he needed some place to spend the night. He was a thrill-seeker, inexperienced, and the tunnel was so narrow, the incline so steep, that he couldn't get back out. He was a voice awakened from the ice by the tip of a hunter's spear. He was a dozen bodies that wouldn't do, too weak, too old, too unwilling. He was a thousand years of slow, unworthy minds and men who died beneath the crushing stone ceiling with a gasp and a whimper. He was a dozen corpses left to be consumed in the tunnels where they died. He was a cartographer. He was Eli. He was stuck, with his heartbeat thin and thready and all his blood pooling in his head. He was gasping for air, that cool touch from before brushing against his throat and down his chest, between his legs, cupping him and comforting him and consuming him. He was ice cold, inside and out, like something new and strange had entered his blood. There was an almost warm brush of lips against his throat. Impossible, but undeniable. A flick of a tongue where nobody could possibly be touching him. The squeeze of pressure against his cock. A spark of uncomfortable pressure clamped against the cave floor. Sleep, said that understanding, cultured voice. Everything will be all right. It rang through Eli's ears. It throbbed through the coldness in his veins. He was... Soon it would be sunrise. The lungs were empty. They lay deflated and gray inside the cartographer's chest, waiting for the sensual caress of Thrawn's breath to fill them. The body was small, but strong, well-muscled, if compact, and the limbs were all intact, and his fingers were clever, and his mind was well-exercised, but open enough to take someone new inside it, to adapt. Still warm, still loose, still flexible. Every inch of him relaxing to welcome Thrawn inside. There was nothing more intimate than this, his melding of two people into one. Eli's flesh, Thrawn's spirit.
And it wasn't so different from sleep, really. With a sigh, the cave walls relaxed. The tunnels straightened. The ceiling rose. The floor sank. Where Eli had been trapped just moments ago, now there was room enough to stand. And the red-eyed apparition was nowhere to be seen. Eli's body shifted. It placed its hands flat against the floor. It pushed itself up onto his knees. It rolled its neck. It filled its lungs. It let out a sigh. Checked the tools clipped to its belt. A compass. A radio. A clinometer. A rangefinder. It stood, young and fit and full of energy. Handsome. Brave. And so fond of caves, really, that he could stay there forever. Eli smiled, a sharp-toothed smile. His eyes flashed red. Something inside him shuddered. Some foreign presence fondling every organ, ghosting its warm breath over the inside of his skin. He cocked his head, like he was listening for some still small voice in his own mind. A greeting, or a shout of fear, a moan of delight. And whatever he heard, or failed to hear, his smile grew wider. He stepped out of the cave, into the open air, for the very first time. The End.